Walt the Big Ticket Harris, representing the great state of Alabama, is in black. Olenek is in red.
Oh, my gosh.
Olenek's so down and out early. 11 seconds in. The Big Ticket coming up large. There is a new heavyweight contender. In my humble opinion, his name is Walt Harris.
That was UFC heavyweight contender Walt the Big Ticket Harris, delivering one of the fastest knockouts in UFC history. On Saturday, Harris will take on Alistair Overeem in the main event of UFC's Fight Night. It's an event that was originally supposed to happen back in December, but was postponed when Harris's stepdaughter, Anaya, went missing. Today, the story of their unique bond and one father's determination to return to the octagon. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Thursday, May 14th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. So, Tom, for people who are not serious MMA fans, can you explain who Walt Harris is and what his status in the sport is?
He's a top 10 heavyweight in UFC, but Mina, his background is pretty fascinating.
Tom Rinaldi is a reporter for ESPN. He recently covered Harris's story for SE Featured.
He was a really an excellent high school basketball player coming out of Alabama. He ultimately went to Jacksonville State, where he was a solid player. But in his mind, he really believed that his future and his fate was going to be to make an NBA roster.
I saw myself at this age retiring from the NBA. I just felt like there was no way I wasn't going to play in the NBA.
He had two tryouts to try to make the NBA, and ultimately that didn't happen as a guy who was sort of a 6'4 and a half tweener. And ultimately, to try to feed his competitive Jones, he turned into fighting and into the world of MMA.
I dealt with a little bit of depression after basketball because I had played since I was five. And then I just kind of had this feeling of I need to get, you know, back in shape. And that's how fighting kind of started.
What was Walt's life like outside of sports?
Walt tells the story of how he met Angela, his wife. And this maybe says something about Walt's charisma. He was actually at a red light. And Angela, who is nearly a decade his senior, pulled up and saw him. And in his telling of the story, asked him out, basically on a date. And he looked at her like, I don't know you. You seem a little crazy to me. And Angela followed him.
Oh.
And again, this is Walt's telling. That's how they began to talk more earnestly and then started the date. And then from there, Walt became, Mina, a father because Angela already had children who were 3 and 4 years old at that time.
What was his relationship with those kids like?
Well, Elijah and Anaya, who were Angela's kids and Walt's stepchildren, he said he fell in love with them immediately. But Anaya connected with him in a way that, by Angela's description, Mina, seemed instantaneous.
We were attached at the hip everywhere we went. You know, she even acted like me. Angela would always say, that's your baby. And I'm like, I know. I didn't feel like a stepdad. I just felt like a dad who stepped up.
As Walt was making this transition and going through the parts of MMA, really the most consistent, supportive voice in his life was his stepdaughter, Anaya.
How did things go early in his MMA career?
So Walt begins fighting in 2008, and as an amateur is dominant, right? He goes 23-1 as an amateur. Walt was winning a lot of these matches and doing them very quickly, either through submission or through knockout. Then he turns pro, and then in 2013, he makes his UFC debut, and it goes poorly.
Harris, not a lot of head movement, just
plowing forward. Oh, big head kick. Beautiful kick. Harris is in big trouble.
That's it.
Outstanding. Wow.
He loses four of his first five fights. This, think about it, Mina, after being that dominant as an amateur and climbing through the ranks to get to the UFC, now you're realizing it's such a huge step up in competition. And I don't know if I have what it takes. I mean, to lose four of your first five, that could end your career in and of itself. And considering that Walt's not doing this at 21 years old, he's doing this when he's approaching 30 and then into his early 30s, that can really challenge your sense of resolve. And he decides to come through that, not give up. Again, one of the biggest voices really propelling him to stay with it and to persist is Anaya, his stepdaughter.
Anaya's room is across the hall from mine. So she would see me down and she would just come in and be like, "Daddy, it's going to be all right. Don't give up. It's going to be okay."
So Tom, after struggling early on, what happened next in Walt Harris's UFC career?
He dedicated himself and begins to go on a run.
Weighing in at 258 pounds, fighting out of Birmingham, Alabama, USA, Walt the Big Ticket Harris.
Walt begins to find out that there are other parts to his game. He's a ferocious striker. He can deal with being on the ground. He can strike very effectively with his legs. And that confidence begins to build and manifest in success and momentum.
So where was he in the fall of 2019 as a fighter?
He had entered the top 10. He came off two consecutive fairly quick knockouts. And he was on the cusp of the biggest fight of his career against the deeply established veteran, Alistair Overeem. And that was supposed to happen in Portland, the fall of 2019. And Walt was locked in great shape, and feeling very confident about the prospects against a really good fighter in Overeem.
So Tom, Walt is on the precipice of this major fight, arguably the biggest of his career. And then something happens. What was it?
October 23rd, 2019, Anaya is going to college in Auburn, Alabama. She's going to a community college there. The family's in Birmingham. Anaya comes back to go to a funeral for a family friend. After the funeral, there's some discussion about whether she's going to make the couple of hour drive back to Auburn, and she decides to do so. She leaves, she makes that drive, and the next morning, Walt doesn't hear from her. And I think for a lot of parents, that would be like, well, you know, okay, maybe she slept in, but Walt is alarmed right away.
Anaya would call me every day. And if she didn't call, she'd text. And so I knew it wasn't just she went out, stayed out late. I knew it was just more dire.
He senses that something is wrong. And so does Elijah, her brother, who gets a text from Anaya's roommate that next morning saying she hasn't come home. And Elijah reaches out to Angela. Walt now learns of it and makes a decision immediately. We're going to Auburn. Something is wrong.
We'll be back in a moment. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. So, Tom, as of last October, it has become clear that Anaya is missing. How did the search for her take shape?
Well, her parents, Walt and Angela, drive directly to Auburn, and a community church there, Mina, helps them set up what really becomes a command center for a massive search effort.
Walt Harris, Angela Harris here. If you have any leads on where our daughter is, Nia Blanchard, please, please, please go to the authorities.
Local news media is involved. It becomes a big story pretty quickly in Alabama.
The Auburn Police Division is asking for the public's help locating a missing woman. 19-year-old Anaya Haley Blanchard reportedly last seen communicated with a friend just before midnight.
3 days after that disappearance, her car is found in Montgomery, an hour away from the apartment she lives in Auburn. And the fears and the worries of everybody involved only begin to grow. The UFC community reacts. Some of the biggest fighters post rewards. Dana White steps forward and puts a reward out for information.
Hey everyone, I'm UFC President Dana White and I need your help. I'm contributing an additional $25,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the perpetrators involved in the disappearance of Anaya Blanchard.
Between the police involvement in both local and state, the FBI getting involved, Mina, it becomes a massive national story as this search continues.
What happened next in the search?
Well, a few things happen. Some tips after that money gets posted lead to an image taken from a convenience store in Auburn. And that becomes identified as the last place Anaya was. Ultimately, a man in that image, Ibrahim Yazid, is identified and he's found and arrested in Florida. An important point here, Mina, is that Yazid was out on bond at the time, already on multiple felony counts from another case, including attempted murder. He's extradited back to Alabama. So there's that piece of it. Okay, we believe this man is involved, but they still don't know where Anaya is. And Yazid isn't talking or sharing any information about what he knows. Ultimately, in an absolutely harrowing moment that Walt shares, when Yazid is brought back to Alabama and makes his first court appearance, Walt is there.
I wanted to kill him, to be honest. It took everything I had in me not to jump over that banister.
Why didn't you jump over the banister?
Because it's not about me. It's about my daughter and getting justice for my daughter. And anything remotely that deters that, I don't want.
What happened after that day?
33 days after Anaya is reported missing, the worst fears are realized. And in a wooded area between Auburn and Montgomery, in a small town in Alabama, the outskirts of it, authorities find Anaya's body. Angela and Walt are called by the prosecutor's office. And they're given this information. And they don't want to accept it. They don't want to believe that it's true. And so they ask for proof. And the official says to Walt, you know, we really don't want to show you the photographs that we have of the scene. And Walt says, I have to see something. And so does Angela. I have to, because I believe that she's alive. And ultimately, Walt is shown a photograph of a pair of boots.
The worst day of my life.
What were you told?
They told us that they had found remains. And they believed that it was her. And then he showed me a picture of her boots. I had just bought her those boots. I knew it was her.
Tom, you interviewed Walt in February. At that point, did it seem like he would ever step in the octagon again?
Yes, he already had started to. And the main impetus for that was his daughter's memory and his belief that she would want him to continue and that she would want him to fight. It was not immediate, Mina, at all.
Nowadays, I didn't want to wake up just drinking a lot, self-medicating, trying to find a way to cope. I vividly remember having a dream, and she just hugged me and told me, Daddy, I'm okay. And from that day on, I went the opposite direction. I can't quit on her. I can't quit on my family. And so from that day on, it was just like, let's go.
And he woke up that next morning and said, I got to go forward. I have a life to live. I have a family to provide for. And I have a purpose to fulfill. And that's what I'm going to do. And that direction led him back to the gym and to train. And he let Dana White know. And he let folks in the UFC know, I'm going to be ready. And that's ultimately what leads us to the next fight of his career, again, against Alistair Overeem.
Tom, Walt's been training for this fight, which was originally scheduled for December of last year, for months. At the same time, the case against Yazeed has been proceeding. Where do things stand now?
So because of COVID-19, the court appearances have been pushed back multiple times. His next court appearance, I believe, is due in June. Prosecutors, at least prior to a gag order that a judge issued in the case, had said they were going to seek the death penalty against Yazeed. There's been something else which has happened, which has been remarkable in terms of Anaya's legacy. And that's something called Anaya's Law. Anaya's Law is a piece of legislation which passed through the legislature in Alabama. It passed through the House unanimously. It passed through Senate committee. It would have to go parts of it to referendum in Alabama. But in essence, Mina, it changes the law regarding bail fundamentally in Alabama. That right now, a judge has no latitude to deny bail other than in a capital murder case. This legislation would amend the Alabama Constitution and would give a judge latitude to cover a greater number of crimes, such as murder, which is not at the capital level, kidnapping, rape, all these crimes, Mina, where bail is still an option. Now a judge would have latitude to deny bail based on this House Bill 113, which is more commonly called Anaya's Law. And that is something that the family has been deeply involved in advocating for, something they desperately hope becomes law in Alabama.
Tom, you spoke with Walt just last weekend. What has it been like for him trying to focus on this fight with the case still unresolved?
I think that his ability to compartmentalize, Mina, is shared by a lot of great athletes. The ability to try to place directly in front of them the most immediate purpose. And right now, that purpose is to be as prepared and ready and clear-minded and resolved as he can be when he gets in the octagon against Alistair Overeem.
I've seen the worst thing a human can possibly see. So there's not a thing a man in a cage can ever do to me.
He has, in his mind, the belief that he's doing this for the memory of his daughter, that this is a way to honor her. Whether he wins or loses, the persistence, the fact that he would keep this purpose in his life, he thinks is a way to honor what she would have wanted.
It's not about fighting for me anymore. It's about fighting for her. And just like Anand said, it's going to be okay.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, Ryan Smith joins us to break down the allegations that Zion Williamson received improper payments before college and whether it even matters for him. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. Despite the fact that there's no basketball happening right now, Pelicans rookie Zion Williamson was in the news this week.
Attorneys representing superstar Zion Williamson's former marketing representative and her company have asked the Pelican star to admit that his mother and his stepfather demanded and received money and gifts from Duke, from Nike, and from Adidas.
Those gifts would, of course, constitute an NCAA violation, which might not mean a whole lot for Zion, given that he's no longer in college. So I asked ESPN's legal analyst, Ryan Smith, to explain why his former marketing agent made these accusations.
Well, what's new is in the suit that's really been going on for the better part of a year, what's new is Prime Sports, which is the company that's suing Zion, they essentially sent him what's called a request for admissions. And this is typically a part of the discovery process in a lawsuit. It's them saying to Zion's people, hey, admit some stuff about this case that's true, and therefore we can save time when the trial moves forward. But the claims, the things they're asking for, are explosive. Admit that you took money from Nike. Admit that you took money from Adidas. Admit that you did these things that are violations of NCAA rules if, in fact, he did them. So it becomes interesting because this has been a very big tit-for-tat between Zion's lawyers and the lawyers for Prime Sports, this marketing agent. But if he actually had to answer these questions and he admitted any of these things, you could be looking at NCAA violations. And if he denied them, but they were true, he could be looking at perjury accusations in court.
Is there any indication that the marketing company has evidence that he did any of this?
Not so far, although they have said through various reports that we're leaving no stone unturned and we have information, but it's not clear what they have. And it will be interesting to see if Zion actually has to answer these questions, because first of all, this has been filed in Florida. And Zion is contesting the jurisdiction of the case in Florida. So that's got to be resolved before you can even take a look at this kind of thing, because this is discovery. It's like saying, okay, now that the case is going forward in this place, let's start exchanging documents. We'll have that discovery, and then we'll move to trial. So I got to figure out that the case is going to be there in the first place. Then even after that, without that evidence, his lawyers might be saying, hey, you're not looking for relevant stuff, and you're not really looking for whether this is true or not. That's not even really applicable to your case. You're just trying to embarrass and scandalize this situation and force him into a position where he might have to settle.
That was going to be my next question, right? Because my understanding of this lawsuit is it's because Zion's family fired the company. What does him violating NCAA rules have to do with any of that?
That's the million-dollar question, and that's exactly what Zion's lawyers would argue to this request for admissions in Florida. They would say, look, in Florida, you have filed what's essentially a breach of contract action. It's basically like saying, hey, you breached the contract that we agreed to. Zion signed this deal. I was going to be the marketing agent. He fired me without cause. Therefore, you breached. But Zion's lawyers might say, hey, okay, so you're claiming we breached the contract. What does that have to do with these accusations in the first place? And by the way, you're not even really looking for that. You're really looking to embarrass me. So I think that would be part of their argument, that it doesn't have much to do with what you're even trying to do, if we even have to end up in Florida in the first place.
So Ryan, Zion is no longer in college. Of course, he's in the NBA. Even if there is evidence, or even if he were to admit any of this, what would it mean for him?
I don't know if it would mean so much for him, Mina, except reputation-wise, as much as it would mean for Duke. So let's look at Zion's reputation first. So he's obviously a superstar. He's a person many, many companies want to have representing them. But if he is seen in some objective way as taking some sort of benefit, you wonder if that will have an impact on his value as a pitch person, as somebody people can market. Because he's got this crystal, you know, this great smile, obviously the amazing game. But if there's a sense that some of the people you're trying to get as customers will look at him and say, hey, this is a guy who did something wrong in college, then could that affect his ability to make money in that way? That would be interesting to see. The other part, though, is Duke. I mean, there's already been investigations on this, and so far it's been nothing to see here. But if, in fact, there was some sort of wrongdoing, then you would wonder whether or not the NCAA would get involved and take another look at Duke and take another look at Zion's time at Duke and ask the question, was there some sort of improper benefit during this time? And should Duke have known about that in some way? And should there be some sort of penalty for that? I know there's a lot of ifs there, but it's just the specter of what could happen if, in fact, there's any truth to this request for admissions that's been sent out.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
Yeah, sure thing. I'll talk to you soon.
I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.